produced by Caleb Padgett on Finding My Way Radio Channel. Listen live on the internet or by calling toll-free 1-347-850-8560 in the U.S. or for international callers, dial 1-888-201-5313. Toll-free USA, 1-347-850-8560. Toll-free international callers, 1-888-201-5313.
My name is Debbie Keller, and my company is Home and Office Transitions. I provide move management services for individuals and companies. We were looking for a company with high-quality service, integrity, and one that was committed to the same high standards of customer service that we were. And we found all of those in Ewing Moving and Storage.
Hello, everyone. This is Richard Floyd with Power Up Your Family. It is great to be back with you once again as we enjoy this edition of Power Up Your Family. Well, it's been another wonderful week. A lot of good things have happened, and I hope that in your lives that you've had good things happen to you and your families, and that you've been richly blessed. As I mentioned in our last edition, this time period is a period of time when we celebrate a lot of birthdays in the Floyd family. From February 25th to March 23rd, we have six different family members with birthdays. And this past weekend, we enjoyed a wonderful celebration of that, as we described in our previous show. So today, we're going to shift gears a little bit and talk about another matter. I'm excited that we are going to be having in the Memphis and Little Rock areas in the month of April some amazing events that are occurring that will be dealing with community interfaith events that are dealing with religious liberty. And we are excited that we can be part of that. So on April the 21st in Little Rock, one of the events will occur there. And there's keynote speakers that are coming into this part of the country. Dr. Rodney Smith, who is the director for the Center of Constitutional Law Studies at Utah Valley University. Previously, he's been president of Southern Virginia University, is a constitutional law professor, an extraordinary individual with great knowledge about constitutional law, has authored books, one of which is on James Madison, the founder, if you will, of religious liberty in America. As you know, James Madison was very instrumental in the writing of our Constitution and of the amendments known as the Bill of Rights. Now, Dr. Smith is going to be joined by another professor, Dr. Nicholas Cole, from Pembroke College in Oxford, England. And so they're going to be keynote speakers at these two events, Little Rock on April the 21st, and in Memphis, actually in the Bartlett Church location of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints on Thursday night, April 23rd. We'll be saying more about that as time gets closer. But in reference to thinking about religious liberty, it has caused me to do some reading and research and pondering and thinking about what a blessed people we are, where those who are able to live in countries, and especially those of us here in America, where at the very core of our Constitution, we are given that great privilege of religious liberty. Now, we know that religious liberty, as deemed by our founders, was not something that government made available to the people, that religious liberty, while it is part of our Constitution and part of the Bill of Rights, and many believe that the Constitution truly is an inspired document, divinely inspired document. But in the course of establishing the First Amendment to the Constitution, which reads very simply, it's a very, very simple statement that says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. You know, these words are simple and direct. Their message and meaning appear to be clear, But you know, unfortunately, through the years, presidents, Congress, the courts have interpreted them in so many different ways that many people today have no sense of the perspective upon which they were based. Believe it or not, at one time, the very notion of government had less to do with politics than with virtue. According to James Madison, often referred to as the founder of the Constitution, quote, we have staked the whole future of American civilization, not upon the power of the government, far from it. We have staked the future of all our political institutions upon the capacity of each and all of us to govern ourselves according to the Ten Commandments of God. Think about that for a moment. The author and the father of the U.S. Constitution stating that government and the power of government should be based on the people governing themselves according to the Ten Commandments of God. George Washington agreed with his colleague James Madison, said Washington, quote, reason and experience both forbid us to expect that national morality can prevail in exclusion of religious principle. Now, that's amazing when you think about it. Reason and experience both forbid us to expect that national morality can prevail in exclusion of religious principle. Nearly 100 years later, Abraham Lincoln responded to a question about the side of God during the Civil War. Got it? Okay. Sorry about that. When he said about a question on which side God was on during the Civil War, Lincoln, with his profound insight, said, I am not at all concerned about that, for I know the Lord is always on the side of the right. But it is my constant anxiety and prayer that I and this nation should be on the Lord's side. So, as we have looked back at our past with political leaders, presidents, if you will, founders of our nation, there's always been an underpinning to recognize that there's a divine power and that with morality, there comes the ability for the masses to be governed in righteousness. Now, Madison, Washington, Lincoln all understood that democracy cannot flourish in a moral vacuum, and that organized religion plays an important role in preserving and maintaining public morality. Indeed, John Adams, another of America's founding fathers, insisted, quote, we have no government armed with power capable of contending with human passions, unbridled by morality and religion, close quote. Let me share that again. John Adams, another of our founding fathers, said, we have no government armed with power capable of contending with human passions, unbridled by morality and religion. Yet that is precisely the position we find ourselves in today. Our government is succumbing to the pressure to distance itself from God and religion. You know, we hear of organizations such as Freedom From Religion and various efforts by the American Civil Liberties Union to impose a secular view on the public square. Now, as we know, our founding fathers established the separation of church and state for a simple reason. They had fled from the tyranny our early founders of our nation had fled from the tyranny of Europe, where the state and religion had become embroiled together, and where religious doctrine became the state religion, if you will. Now, as a descendant of Roger Williams, interesting to note that Roger Williams provided a great example and became a heroic fighter for religious freedom. He was one of the most courageous leaders of the Puritan movement. He began his ministry in England, where he where he was his zealous work to free the church from the influence of the king brought the wrath of the government upon him. Eventually, he and his young wife were forced to flee to the New World. But instead of finding himself among like-minded reformers in America, he encountered much of the same resistance and persecution until he established a new colony called Providence in Rhode Island. Here, America had its first taste of true religious freedom, and the success of the Providence colony convinced many that the concept tasted good. Founding fathers very likely were aware of the experiences of Roger Williams and others when they wrote in the First Amendment that the government was not to impede the free exercise of religion. They wrote, "The church and the state were to be separate, independent entities, not to eliminate morality and God's law, but to make sure that the power of government could never be used to silence religious expression or to persecute religious practice." Once again, quoting George Washington, quote, "If I could have entertained the slightest apprehension that the Constitution, framed in the convention where I had the honor to preside, might possibly endanger the religious rights of any ecclesiastical society, certainly I would never have placed my signature to it." I would imagine that George Washington may be turning in his grave if he were to see what's going on in America today. It would be quite interesting to hear his commentary. So, as we think about religious liberty in a free society, the words as found in the First Amendment are very clear, because it states that we, Congress, shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, which means simply that the government is not going to establish a state religion. But the next part is equally important, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Now, we've been seeing over the last many decades a great movement to take morality and religion out of the public square. The idea being is that it's under this auspices of separation of church and state. So the constitutional provisions relating to government and religion were not intended to control the religious rights of people. Rather, they were intended to expand them and to eliminate the fear of government intrusion. These provisions were meant to separate religion and government so that religion would be independent. The experiences of Roger Williams and other reformers provided our constitutional fathers with important facts to help them deal with the potential risks of a state religion corrupted by politics. Consequently, they drafted an article in the Bill of Rights to guarantee religious freedom from government as opposed to government's freedom from religion. Now, as we think about the current circumstance that we find ourselves in, what's been going on in America for the last 20 or 30 years, maybe 50 years? I remember as a teenager who had just been able to get a driver's license, seeing the cover of Time magazine. Now think about this. On April the 8th, 1966, on the cover of Time magazine, were the words in big bold print, "God is dead." God is dead. I've watched with curiosity and with significant concern what has happened in our country in the years since then. As we have probably heard in the media and through the various Gallup and Pew and other polling organizations, there's some sad statistics that are starting to occur. Last year, I believe it was, the Gallup poll indicated that U.S. church membership is down sharply over the last two decades. And kind of the summary of that article that I read earlier is half of Americans are church members, down from 70% in 1999. So in other words, 50% of Americans today acknowledge an affiliation with a religious institution, whether it's a church, synagogue, or a mosque, or some other form of religious practice. Most of the decline attributable, though, is to an increase in the percentage of individuals with no religion at all. Membership has fallen 9 points amongst those who are religious. I'll share a little bit of this article. As Christians and Jewish Americans prepare to celebrate Easter and Passover, respectively, Gallup finds the percentage of Americans who report belonging to a church, synagogue, or mosque at an all-time low, averaging 50%. U.S. church membership was 70% or higher from 1937 through 1976. 70% or higher, falling modestly to an average of 68% in the 70s through the 90s. However, the past 20 years have seen an acceleration in the drop-off, with a 20 percentage point decline since 1999, and more than half of that change occurring since the start of the current decade. The decline in church membership is consistent with larger societal trends in declining church attendance and an increasing proportion of Americans with no religious preference. In the article, it compares church membership data from 1998 to 2000 and 2016 to 2018 periods, and using combined data from multiple years to facilitate subgroup analysis, they're reporting on average 69% of U.S. adults were members of a church in 1998 to 2000, compared with 52% in 2016 to 2018. The decline in church membership mostly reflects the fact that fewer Americans than in the past now have any religious affiliation. However, even those who do identify with a particular religion are less likely to belong to a church or other place of worship than in the past. So a trend toward no religious preference is cited as a key factor in declining membership. Although there has been a steep increase in the proportion of Americans who do not have a religious attachment, they do remain a small minority of the U.S. population. Three quarters of Americans, 77%, identify with some organized religion, though that is down from 90% in 1998 through 2000. The still sizable proportion of religious Americans also contributed to declining church membership, as fewer in this group belong to a church than did so two decades. At the turn of the century, 73% of U.S. adults with a religious preference belong to a church, compared with 64% today. Now, they go on to talk about that a big part of this is the generational change that is pushing the decline in church membership. Religiosity is strongly related to age, with older Americans far more likely than younger adults to be members of churches. However, church membership has dropped among all generational groups over the past two decades, with declines of roughly 10 percentage points among traditionalists, baby boomers, and Generation X. Most millennials were too young to be polled in 1998 to 2000. Now that they have reached adulthood, their church membership rates are exceedingly low and appear to be a major factor in the drop in overall U.S. church membership. Just 42% of millennials are members of churches on average. By comparison, 20 years ago, 62% of members of Generation X belonged to a church when they were about the same age as millennials are today. The low rates of church membership among millennials conform with the generation's weaker attachment to religion in general. On average, 68% of millennials identify with a religion in the 2016 to 2018 church membership surveys, while 29% do not. In all other generations, at least 79% have a religious affiliation, with corresponding lower percentages expressing no faith preference. So there's a lot of additional statistics here, but let me just kind of get to the chase here. Why is it that we're seeing these declines? What is going on in America? It's causing people to lose belief in God, to have no particular religious affiliation. What's going on? Well, some would say that maybe there's been too many scandals in various church denominations and people have lost faith in these institutions. Others would say that we've taken God out of our schools by not allowing any kind of prayers. There are other issues at work, though, and an interesting article by the Heritage Foundation talks about the continuing threat to religious liberty. And I won't go through all of that, but some of what that article indicates is that due to Supreme Court decisions and other court cases, we're now in a whole new realm where religious conscience is under attack. And they cite some examples. For example, 2 years to the day after the Supreme Court refined marriage in a particular case, the court announced it would hear a case about the extent to which private parties may be forced to embrace this new vision of marriage. The case involved Jack Phillips, a Colorado baker who declined to bake a wedding cake for a same-sex wedding reception. There was nothing remarkable about Phillips' decision. With every cake he designs, Jack believes he is serving Christ. He had previously turned down requests to create Halloween-themed cakes, lewd bachelor party cakes, and a cake celebrating a divorce. Yet Jack was never reprimanded over those decisions. He found himself, however, in hot water only with the same-sex wedding cake. The immediate question before the Supreme Court was whether it's constitutional for Colorado to penalize Jack under its sexual orientation and gender identity, SOGI anti-discrimination statute. But the case has implications for millions of believers from every walk of life and beyond that, for the health of our culture and our constitutional system of ordered liberty. While there has always been disagreement about what religious liberty requires in particular cases, the idea of religious liberty as a fundamental human right has more or less been a consensus in America. It became controversial only in recent years as the government tried to force religious conservatives to violate their beliefs on sex and marriage, and as liberal advocacy groups decided that civil liberties aren't for conscientious objectors to the sexual revolution. That's why we saw the American Civil Liberties Union oppose Catholic nuns' attempt to get out of the Obamacare HHS preventative care mandate, in which the Department of Human Health and Human Services required employers to provide insurance covering sterilization and birth control, including forms of birth control that prevent embryos from implanting in the uterus, thereby causing abortion. The HHS mandate garnered the most headlines, but it's far from the only flashpoint. In several jurisdictions, Catholic charities and other faith-based adoption agencies have been forced to abandon their invaluable work simply because they want to place needy children only in homes with married moms and dads. The government calls that discrimination based on sexual orientation. Agree or disagree with Catholic charities, its belief that mothers and fathers are not interchangeable, that moms and dads are not replaceable, has nothing to do with sexual orientation. And respecting conscience here wouldn't make a single concrete difference to same-sex couples, who would remain free and able to adopt from public agencies and other providers. Yet lawmakers aren't just coercing agencies such as Catholic Charities. They're punishing states for declining to coerce these agencies. When Texas passed a law protecting the freedom of such agencies, California barred state employees from traveling to Texas on non-essential official business. Religious schools adhering to the historic vision of marriage are also at risk. They stand to lose accreditation and nonprofit tax status, as well as eligibility for student loans, vouchers, and education savings accounts. The left regularly equates homophobia with racism, knowing full well that the latter can serve as grounds for ending tax-exempt status, as happened to Bob Jones University in the 70s as a result of racist policies, which, by the way, were lifted in 2000 regarding dating and marriage. The vulnerability of these kind of issues extend to Orthodox Jews, Roman Catholics, Evangelical Christians, Confessional Lutherans, Latter-day Saints, Muslims, and anyone else who believes that we are created male and female, and that male and female are created for each other. Charities, schools, and professionals will find themselves on the wrong side of regulations, bans on what government deems discrimination in public accommodations and employment, mandates in healthcare and education, revocation of nonprofit status, accreditation, licensing, and funding. Rolling Stone magazine just profiled the LGBT activist Tim Gill, who has pledged his $500 million fortune to passing SOGI laws that will, in his words, punish the wicked. And it won't just be the government that does the punishing. As the law insists that social conservatives are like racists, big businesses and other institutions will bring their own pressure to bear on anyone who dissents. Professional associations through licensing and accreditation procedures will enforce new orthodoxy. The American Bar Association has promulgated new model rules of professional conduct that make it unethical for lawyers to discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation, gender identity, marital status, or socioeconomic status, including social activities, which, as former Attorney General Ed Meese has explained, would include church membership and worship activities. Legally and culturally, believers should prepare for challengers. So, there's much more in this article, and time doesn't permit me to go through it all, but there has been a consistent and ongoing, relentless effort to take moral values, which are the underpinning of our nation, out of our society. And moral values come from religious beliefs. If Thomas Jefferson and James Madison came back to America today and heard about the plight of the Little Sisters of the Poor, their first response would not be to cite the First Amendment. It would be to ask what the Department of Health and Human Services is and what authorizes it to issue a preventative care mandate. This should be a lesson to religious believers, including many who supported the passage of Obamacare, and how policies that violate economic freedom and massively expand the role of government can also end up violating religious freedom. We must assist those in need without unduly infringing on liberty and while respecting their and everyone else's consciences. The best defense of religious liberty is a defense of liberty more broadly, a return to limited government and the rule of law. Nowhere is this more applicable than the never-ending expansion of anti-discrimination statutes. What started out as well-justified efforts to combat racism, sexism, and anti-Semitism have morphed into laws protecting against the dignity harm allegedly inflicted by anyone who disagrees with progressives about human sexuality. In conclusion, and there's much more that could be said about this, how does this all relate to the family? Well, it's important to recognize that as we create an atmosphere within our homes of one, recognizing religious tolerance of others, of other faiths, two, recognizing that there is a supreme being and that our rights as citizens, those inalienable rights, come from God, not from man, not from government. We need to do a little history teaching, a little constitutional law teaching within our homes to help our families understand. You can get a free copy of the Constitution through the Heritage Foundation. It's a little booklet, has the Constitution. Might be a great family home evening practice to go through and study and read the Constitution together and understand the various aspects of it. I'm fearful that many students in school are not getting much teaching about the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. So I would conclude by simply saying that whether you be Christian, Jew, Muslim, or other faith, that remember religious liberty is key to our freedom. It's not just one of our freedoms, it is the very essence of who we are as a people. Free people with religious liberty helps to protect and preserve the conditions that make peaceful coexistence possible. Religious liberty acknowledges both man's dignity and the reality that we live in a pluralistic society, and the diversity, even as we work to know and live the truth, is essential. I testify of this and pray that each of us might be mindful of the great blessing that we have to live in America, even with all of these challenges. And I do so in the blessed and sacred name of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Produced by Caleb Padgett on Finding My Way Radio Channel. Listen live on the internet or by calling toll-free 1-347-850-8560 in the U.S. or for international callers, dial 1-888-201-5313. Toll-free USA, 1-347-850-8560. Toll-free international callers, 1-888-201-5313.